is Steve Sherlock, another Franklin Matters radio show, number 691 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the audio recording of the Jan 6 vigil held on Thursday, January 6th, 2022, on the Franklin Town Common. The vigil was organized by the Committee to Protect Our Democracy, CPOD, a subgroup of the Franklin Democratic Town Committee, as part of remembrances scheduled across the USA. The Master of Ceremony, Justin Bates, introduced all the speakers. The recording of the vigil runs approximately 45 minutes, so let's listen in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for being here tonight. My name is Justin Bates. I'm a member of the Franklin Democratic Town Committee, and again, we're very pleased that so many people showed up tonight. Before we begin, I'd like to thank a few people for joining us here tonight, some of our local leaders and elected representatives. We have State Senator Becca Rausch, State Rep Jeff Roy, Dana Hansen, District Director for Jake Auchincloss, and then I don't know if I should go through all the town councilors, school committee members here, but we have Ted Cormier Ledger, Kobe Frangillo, Tom Mercer, Brian Chandler. I know I'm forgetting some other faces. Melanie, I can't see you behind the mask there. But all of our local leaders, we value your leadership in these times, and we appreciate you for being here. We ask in respect to those who are immunocompromised and immunosuppressed and all others that when social distancing is not possible, we continue to wear a mask. And I'd like to take a moment before we begin, kind of a grace before meals, if you would, to take a moment of remembrance for the 830,000 lives of the people who have passed from COVID. Thank you. These past 2 years have forced a reckoning with our history that not many have been urged to confront until that moment. This has required difficult work and uncomfortable truths for us all. This movement forward, this healthy and necessary growth, I've heard these acts of reflection, of learning, of reckoning described as a sort of balm for the soul. This movement, however, has been trailed by a dark shadow of hate and venom. Hate that materialized in Charlottesville takes the shape of racism, whether it be Islamophobia, anti-Asian sentiment, in our streets and our hallways. I practiced that flip bet. Hate that has been growing larger and bolder, culminating in the January 6th attack on the fabric of our democracy. On the morning of January 6th, 2021, we all woke up without an inkling of what would unravel later that day. We woke up without any idea of the impending violent and deadly attack against our country, our democracy, and all Americans. So this January 6th, exactly 1 year later, Americans across race, place, party, and background are holding vigils to say, in America, the voters decide the outcomes of elections. The Franklin Democratic Town Committee thanks you again for joining us today as we stand in solidarity with hundreds of vigils happening across the country, just like ours. We have strength in numbers and power in union. Tonight we'll hear from several community leaders as well as our elected representatives with their thoughts and reflections on what transpired on January 6th, what led up to January 6th, and what has happened since then. I would now like to introduce Rachel Plukas, the chair of the Franklin Dems, who will read Every Day is January 6th.
Yay, short people. Short people. Okay, first of all, thank you everyone for finding the time to be out here on a cold January night. We're really showing that Franklin does not accept violence, and we support our democracy, so it's a wonder to see everybody out here in the cold. Sit tight, we're gonna get nice and warm before the storm comes. So again, this is from the New York Times on January 1st of this year, just about a week ago. It's called Every Day is January 6th. 1 year after the smoke and broken glass, the mock gallows, and the very real bloodshed of that awful day, it is tempting to look back and imagine that we can, in fact, simply look back. To imagine that what happened on January 6th, 2021, 365 days ago, a deadly riot at the seat of American government, incited by a defeated president, amid a last-ditch effort to thwart the transfer of power to his successor, was horrifying. But that is in the past, and that we as a nation have moved on. That's an understandable impulse, and after 4 years of chaos, cruelty, and incompetence, culminating in a pandemic and the once unthinkable trauma of January 6th, most Americans were desperate for some peace and quiet. I think me. On the surface, we have achieved that. On the surface, we have achieved that. Our political life seems more or less normal these days as the president pardons turkeys, Congress quarrels over spending bills. But peel back a layer and things are far from normal. January 6th is not in the past. January 6th is every day. It's regular citizens who threaten election officials and other public servants who ask, when can we use the guns? And who vow to murder politicians who dare to voice their conscience. It is Republican lawmakers scrambling to make it harder for people to vote and easier to subvert their will if they do. It is Donald Trump, who continues to stoke the flames of conflict with his rampant lies and limitless resentments, and whose twisted version of reality still dominates one of the nation's two major political parties. Truly, grappling with the threat ahead means taking a full account of the terror of that day just a year ago. It's just a year ago, you guys. And here we are today, like Franklin should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Now we're gonna welcome Colin Cass to remember the lives of those who passed on and after January 6th.
Here are the facts about the five people who died during or after the attack on the Capitol. The Capitol Police press release the day after the riot said that Officer Brian Sicknick, quote, passed away due to injuries sustained while on duty. The report stated that Sicknick, quote, was injured while physically engaging with protesters. He returned to his division office and collapsed, end quote. On April 19th, the chief medical examiner, Diaz, found that Sicknick suffered two strokes nearly 8 hours after being sprayed with the chemical irritant during the riot. Diaz said that Sicknick died of natural causes, but, quote, all that transpired played a role in his condition. Four other police officers committed suicide in the days and months after the riot. The first was Officer Howard Leavengood, 51, who had been guarding the Capitol for 15 years and was on duty at the Capitol on January 6th. He took his own life 3 days after the riots. Several days later, D.C. police officer Jeffrey Smith, 35, who was injured in the riots on January 6th, also committed suicide. In defending the Capitol, Smith was struck on the helmet by a metal pole thrown by rioters. Later that night, his wife said he went to the police medical clinic where he was prescribed pain medication and put on sick leave. After visiting a police clinic on January 14th and being ordered back to work, Smith shot himself on the way to work. In July, 6 months after the riot at the Capitol, two Metropolitan Police Department officers who responded to the Capitol on January 6th committed suicide. Kyle DeFreitag, 26, was not involved with the clashes with rioters during the breach of the Capitol, but was deployed to the Capitol to enforce the curfew after the mob had been cleared from the building. The same day that the Metropolitan Police Department announced DeFreitag's death, it confirmed that another officer, Gunther Hashida, had also committed suicide. Hashida was assigned to the emergency response team and had helped secure the Capitol on January 6th. These are the people that we honor today.
Now please join me in a moment of silence, remembering Officer Brian Sicknick, U.S. Capitol Police Officer Howard Liebengood, D.C. Police Officer Jeffrey Smith, Officer Kyle DeFreitag, and Officer Gunther Hashida. Now please welcome Joni McGee, who will read with us words from Jim McGovern.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening.
It's nice to see you all. I'm going to go off agenda a little bit before I read from the Honorable Congressman Jim McGovern. Because as my community, I want to share with you, 40 years ago today, when I was a senior in high school, I was actually on the House floor. I was working as a congressional House page under the service of Congressman Joseph Moakley. It was a sacred place to be, and during my tenure, I had the good fortune to see then President Ronald Reagan worked collaboratively with then Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill. They worked to promote democracy. They worked to take care of folks, to take care of us. And I wonder how we have devolved so much in the four decades that have transpired. We're now a nation of division, of hate, of violence. And I think we have to do differently. I think we have to find love and find where we unite and where we're in community and be kinder, more respectful folks, no matter your political stripes. And now I'm going to read an op-ed article by my friend, the Honorable Congressman Jim McGovern. This was in the Boston Globe on January 3rd, 2022. The title reading, "The Coup is Still Underway." But a year later, a fundamental question remains. Will the January 6th insurrection be swept under the rug or seem far away from what it could be? The beginning of the end of American democracy as we know it. Many of the people who failed to overturn the election are now using the levers of power at the state level to rig future campaigns. They've introduced more than 440 bills across 49 states designed to hijack the election process and suppress the right to vote. This represents a dagger to the heart of the American experiment, that the people get to decide who is in charge. Chillingly, 34 of those bills have become law in 19 states. Those who manufactured the crusade to steal the 2020 election now know that they have failed, but they are laying the groundwork to overturn the next election successfully. The coup is still underway. Make no mistake, an aspiring dictator, egged on by his allies in Congress, failed to hold on to the power this time. But those very same people haven't given up. They are analyzing their failures, and they will continue their brazen attempts to seize power by any means necessary. This is not some academic debate. In future elections, they might succeed at the unfathomable. To thwart them, we must continue to expose what happened on January 6th, to demand accountability for those who planned and participated in the attacks, and to take every action necessary to defend our democracy. We may not be as lucky the next time. Okay. And please love one another.
Thank you, Joni. Next, Becca Rausch, State Senator for Norfolk, Bristol, and Middlesex districts, the entirety of Franklin, now among that grouping, will join us with some words and reflections.
Thank you, and good evening.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you all for coming, and thank you to everyone who worked so hard to make this vigil a reality on this solemn and chilling anniversary of the insurrection at our nation's capital. It takes a lot of courage to process what happened on January 6, 2021 at the Capitol building and what it means for all of us as Americans. I'll be totally honest, when I was invited to speak tonight, I was at a loss for words. And those of you who know me know that that is a very rare thing.
I'll vouch for that.
In fact, I too am still processing the events of that day. And I'm sure many of you are as well. I'm processing what it meant for me as an American, as a community member, as a woman, a lover of democracy, a state senator, a descendant of immigrants, a Jew, and a mom of two young kids. I want to give you a little bit of insight as to what that day was like for me as context. We on Beacon Hill extended our legislative term because of COVID. Usually the cycle ends in July, but because of COVID, we extended until January 5th, the very last day that we could possibly do business, because the first Wednesday of each January in each odd-numbered year is the date on which the new members of the General Court are sworn in. So we extended as far as we possibly could to make sure that we were getting the work done, to make sure we had as much time as we could possibly give ourselves to uplift public health, families, businesses, and communities, and help support and sustain people through this deadly global pandemic. And as I'm sure my friend and colleague Jeff Roy could tell you better than me, because he's been at this longer than I have, that last day of the session is a long day. It goes basically until the next morning. So around 1 o'clock in the morning, technically on January 6th, but still in formal session from our homes, because it was unsafe for us to be together in the chambers, my first bill became enacted into law and sent to the governor's desk. That bill was specifically designed to address racial disparities in maternal health. And the work from that bill that the governor did sign is now underway so that we can take that work to the next step and the next step and the next step so that Black pregnant people in this Commonwealth do not die at a rate of more than double that of white people giving birth. That was 1 o'clock in the morning. You might imagine by 3:30, 4 o'clock, you know, people start falling asleep. It's tough, right? Especially when you're at home on your couch and not on the Senate floor. We wrapped up session around 5 a.m. And then we took a nap. And then I got up, got myself ready, and went to Beacon Hill to be sworn in for my second term as your state senator. And we stood in Ashburton Park and we were sworn in outside, which was really cool, I might say. And that was at 11. So I passed my first bill enacted into law at 1 o'clock in the morning. We finished session at 5 a.m. I took a nap, we took the kids to school, and then I went right back to it. That was 11 a.m. I left the State House around 12:30. And the news of the insurrection was starting to come in over the radio on my way home. Now, this has a lot of implications, right? Are they coming for us next? Is there going to be something in Boston? All of our addresses are published. Are they coming to our homes? My kids have had the totally awesome and very unique and very special privilege of getting driveway basketball lessons from Ed Markey. Not your average childhood experience by any stretch, but I will never forget what it was like trying to explain to my children what was happening in Washington. Is Ed gonna be okay? What about Catherine Clark? These people who they know. And that is an incredible privilege that they have that the vast majority of kids don't have. But they know these people. Mommy, what's gonna happen for us, for you? And my friends, those are scary and difficult questions to answer. And to some degree, we are still answering those questions, and we will be continuing to have to answer those questions for our children for a long time. Because that day was a collective, massive scar on our nation's history, a deep, dark stain on the very fabric of our democracy. And it was decades in the making. And all of us, our entire country, still has a serious amount of healing to do. There are many truths we hold to be self-evident by gathering here tonight in the face of adversity, political polarization, division within our own community, and the trials and tribulations of this ongoing public health crisis. We, the people, believe in a strong democracy and our constitutional rights to vote in free and fair elections. We, the people, know at our core that all humans are created equal. We, the people, will actively thwart the white supremacy, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and ignorance that spurned the insurrection and still pulse through our communities. We, the people, have a lot of work to do to heal the wounds in this country and rebuild. And we, the people, are going to roll up our sleeves, get to work, and do everything in our collective power to ensure this never happens again. The January 6th Capitol insurrection, 1 year ago today, represents far too many ills in our nation. Political polarity, far-right rhetoric scapegoating oppressed groups for our nation's problems, centuries of anti-black racism serving as a bedrock for white rage, a stark rise in neo-Nazism, an untethered Second Amendment, an uptick in hate speech and dangerous unchecked online discourse, an economic system that easily creates far too many haves and have-nots, the gross politicization of data-driven, expert-recommended public health protections, and flawed senses of freedom and liberty distorted beyond recognition. The list goes on and on and on. Challenging these fallacies, demanding more of your elected leaders, engaging in difficult conversations, reversing and preventing injustice. All of these things are going to take time and energy from each and every one of us. But together, we will overcome. May the memories of those we lost 1 year ago be a blessing. While this is a difficult anniversary for all of us, a handful of families are missing a loved one at their dinner table tonight in the aftermath of this tragedy. Multiple first responders to the insurrection have since died by suicide. We all carry the weight of the insurrection, and my heart goes out particularly to the guards who defended our nation's capital and the members of Congress and legislative staffers who still grapple with the lived trauma of that day. Tonight, we reflect and we mourn in community, in solidarity. Tonight, we affirm that here in Franklin and throughout our Commonwealth and our nation, we have each other's backs. We take care of our neighbors. We believe in a strong democracy and free and fair elections. Tonight, we commit, we recommit to doing our part at each and every level of governance to make sure a tragedy like this does not happen again at any level of our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Becca. Now welcome Dana, the District Director for Congressman Jake Auchincloss.
Hello, my name is Dana Hansen. I am Congressman Jake Auchincloss's District Director. Many of you may have worked with Lisa Nelson. I am the new Lisa Nelson, as many people like to refer to me. The Congressman could not be here this evening. He's grateful for the invitation to deliver these remarks on his behalf here in Franklin this evening. He is in our nation's capital today. He attended several different reflections in the Capitol. Just speaking personally, following up on Senator Rausch's amazing comments this evening, I think we are all still trying to process what happened 1 year ago today. And from a congressional staffer's perspective, as somebody who is based here in Massachusetts, but is basically on an umbilical cord to the U.S. Capitol, we were 3 days in with a newly sworn in freshman congressman in the halls of Congress last year on this day. We were literally in our district office, like unpacking boxes, getting our phones and computers set up, relishing in the excitement of what could be for this year's Congress, and at the same time holding this terror and agony over what was happening in DC to all of our representatives, our senators, our staff, colleagues. And today there have been a lot of reflections and resources available to many staffers. I'm a new staffer to Congress. My colleagues who work on the Congressman's team have served on Capitol Hill for 20, 30 years. So this was something that they are still processing, and the trauma will be with many for a very long time. So with that, I would like to give remarks from my boss, Congressman Jake Auchincloss. I am sorry I am not able to be with you this evening. I traveled to Washington to mark this anniversary with my colleagues during a series of events at the Capitol. I remember watching from my office last year as the cordon of police staggered and then broke. That's when I knew things had gone from bad to violent. Today is the 1 year anniversary of the insurrection, but it's not history, it's current events. Today needs to be a call to action, not just a day of reflection. We are in the midst of an ongoing threat to our democracy, and it will take all hands on deck to stop it. Congress must pass the Freedom to Vote Act to ensure access. Congress must pass the Freedom to Vote Act to ensure access to the ballot box, end partisan gerrymandering, and protect election officials from partisan subversion. We must also pass the Protecting of Democracy Act to strengthen federal separation of powers and checks and balances at the federal level. These two pieces of legislation are a critical start to our path forward. We risk seeing a repeat if we don't act. Trump, or other would-be despot, could run again, and we need to be ready to stop him or anyone else who attempts to steal the election from the American people. Coming together to protect American democracy should not be a partisan issue. When the Capitol was secured on January 6, 2021, I was in the House chambers with Representative Richie Torres. Broken glass was surrounding us, yet some Republicans were still objecting to the election results. It was the lowest moment for American democracy in my lifetime, and I want it to stay that way. It's long past time for Republicans to support the January 6th Commission's operations instead of obstructing it. It's long past time Republicans clearly stated that Joe Biden won a free and fair election. It's time for us to heal as a nation, but we cannot do that without first committing ourselves to protect our democracy and American ideals for generations to come. I'm committing to do all that I can to protect and strengthen our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana. And finally, I'd like to welcome Jeff Roy, the state representative for Medway and Franklin, to share his perspective and thoughts on January 6th.
Well, thank you, Justin, and thank you to all of the speakers who have been here tonight. Simply amazing, putting January 6th into perspective. And I want to thank each and every one of you who came out here tonight to brave the cold and be a part of this commemoration of the event. Now, Senator Rausch had started talking about what went on in the House chamber on January 6th. And I will share with you that the House was under a similar schedule, and we adjourned, yes, around 5 a.m. on January 6th. But there were two items on bills that I had been working on. One as simple as a resolution for one of our Franklin residents, Frank Liotta, commemorating his 90th birthday. That was, I looked at the record today. We did that action. And happy birthday, Frank, wherever you are today. And also a bill that I had been working on for 2 years was passed at around 2 o'clock in the morning, and that was to prevent actions of campus sexual assault in the college campuses across the Commonwealth. Very proud of the work that we had done that day, and got a few hours of sleep, woke up for the convening of the 192nd General Court. And those proceedings began in the House of Representatives at 11:45 a.m. with remarks by the Dean of the House, Representative Kevin Honan. The Dean is the oldest serving member who starts the opening session. And Representative Honan quoted from John F. Kennedy's City on a Hill speech, noting that Massachusetts leaders have shaped our destiny long before the Great Republic was born. Its principles have guided our footsteps in times of crisis as well as in times of calm. Its democratic institutions, including this historic body, have served as beacons of light for other nations as well as our sister states. And Representative Honan reminded us that as we begin our work anew here in Boston with a new administration coming together in Washington around a country divided and struggling over racial injustice, economic insecurity, and the health crisis of our lifetime, the Commonwealth and the country need that city on a hill, and all of us more than ever. Then the governor administered the oaths and we elected Representative Ronald Mariano as our speaker. We heard more speeches and we were invigorated and anxious to begin our work. The proceedings ended at around 2:05 p.m. and I can tell you I was exhausted and I decided, like Senator Rush, to sit down and watch some television. And I turned on the proceedings in Congress and I was alarmed within minutes. What I saw unfolding was horrific and defied the logic I had witnessed about lawmaking over the previous 24 hours. Violent extremists had stormed the Capitol in what was the culmination of months of repeatedly disproven lies from the former president about the outcome of the 2020 election. Our democracy was under attack. This was an insurrection, plain and simple. It was a calculated effort to subvert the will of the voters and undermine the peaceful transition of governance. And I immediately thought, as I was sitting here watching this, of my visit to Congress Hall in Philadelphia several years ago. For those of you who may not recall, Congress Hall was the spot where on March 4th, 1797, George Washington made the peaceful transition of power to John Adams. It's where George Washington performed his last public act before retiring to private life. It was the first time in our recorded modern history that power transferred from a head of state to the next without bloodshed or death. What took place in Congress Hall 225 years ago should be our beacon today, but January 6th smashed that beacon and created a dark cloud over America. And it revealed a new force in American politics, not merely a mix of right-wing organizations, but a broader mass political movement that has violence at its core. It revealed that our republic faces an existential threat from a movement that is openly contemptuous of democracy and has shown that it is willing to use violence to achieve its ends. Now, preventing further violence from this movement will require a deeper understanding of its activities and the participants. And to understand the events of January 6th and devise solutions to prevent their recurrence, we Americans need a fine-grained comprehension of who attacked the Capitol. We need to understand the ideology and the beliefs of those who participated, knowing what kind of people they are and what their lives are like. One truth is clear. You can't participate in or support a violent storming of the U.S. Capitol aimed at overturning state-certified election results and still be an American patriot. Further, a citizen can't continue to back anyone who schemed to overturn the election results in extra-constitutional ways and fairly claim the cloak of patriotism. As GOP U.S. Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming said of her Republican Party in a weekend TV appearance, I quote, "We can either be loyal to Donald Trump or we can be loyal to our Constitution. We cannot be both." Now, getting to the bottom of this tragic event is the object of the bipartisan House Commission, and we anxiously await the public hearings and report. It and the evidence it supplies will help us grapple with the growing distrust in our society, and hopefully will help us marshal the force and energy needed to save our democracy from collapse. After Pearl Harbor and 9/11, our country mobilized a call to arms with unprecedented unity and determination to defeat the enemies of democracy. Today, those who undermine our government and threaten our future are living within our own borders. The attack on the Capitol on January 6th has to be reckoned with honestly and judiciously now, before our political and social differences divide us even further and further. As President Biden said just this morning, at this moment, we must decide what kind of a nation we are going to be. Are we going to be a nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people? Are we going to be a nation that lives not by the light of the truth, but in the shadow of lies? We cannot allow ourselves to be that kind of nation. The way forward is to recognize the truth and live by it. With that, I urge everyone who's with us here tonight, I urge you to stay engaged. I urge you to work to support your democracy and remain hypervigilant towards those who threaten its very existence. We remain that city on the hill. We need you. And I look forward to being by your side on that journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. And thank you again to State Senator Rausch, Dana, State Rep Roy, Rachel, Colin, and Joni. And also thank you to Sue and Colin Cass for your leadership and determination to make this event possible. Right, history is not just in books. It's not an academic exercise. It contains the fate and destiny of our world. We cannot turn our backs. We cannot turn a blind eye. We cannot be ignorant. As Rep Roy said, we need to stay engaged. We need to stay together, and we need to stay vocal. And this event could not have culminated in a better appearance of Franklin's determination and Franklin's will. So thank you all for coming out here today. Rachel Plukas has a engagement opportunity already.
That's my job. So I would imagine and hope it's not as cold out as we could have had. And as somber as this event is, I'm hoping that everyone's leaving with a little bit of energy and a little bit of hope to continue advocating for the future of our country and our planet. That being said, I'd like a few individuals to start waving their flags over here. They represent a community called 350 Mass. Yes, indeed. And tonight, at 7 o'clock at 262 Chestnut Street.
Online,
right, we've gone to all Zoom, okay. So for that information, please find yourselves gathering over there to get further information about how to connect. 350 Mass is extremely engaged in supporting the future of our planet, given the changes due to climate and irresponsibility in terms of our lawmakers and ourselves to protect our planet. And as important as it is to support democracy, democracy does not matter when there is not a planet to defend. And I hear laughter and I appreciate it because I laugh as well. However, it's the truth. We need a planet to defend first. So please find a little bit of energy, grab yourself some coffee, talk with Rand and Carolyn Barthel, who have been extremely well engaged with this broader community, and we'll see you on Zoom. Thank you very, very much.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.